Welcome to Small Business Insights, where back office conversations give us insight to what's really going on. Is it grit or luck that gives a small business owner an advantage? Let's find out. I'm your host, Laura Fisher. Well, welcome today. I have John Cavett from Anastasis Global. He is a consultant and a really great man, and I wanted y'all to meet him today. So, John, say hello.
Thanks, Laura, for having me on. Hello to everybody.
I am so glad you're here. So, tell us, where did you grow up? Tell me a little bit about yourself before we get into all of who you are.
Well, I grew up in really small towns out in West Texas in the Panhandle, and you know, my claim to fame is valedictorian of my class of 11 students up in Silverton, Texas.
And I'd claim it too.
Oh yeah. Oh, that's great. And so I'm from a small town, USA, and grew up in that area.
Were you a farmer?
Well, my dad was in the school business. So we were, you know, superintendents, but yeah, he was a superintendent, but my mom's side of the family were farmers. So yeah, I was in the agriculture side as well as the education side.
So were you on the farm waking up and doing that kind of stuff growing up?
I did work on the farm, drove the tractor and worked on irrigation systems and that kind of stuff. So that was fun.
All right. Well, I always think, I'm always curious to find out what people did while they were in high school or growing up. Because to me, when I'm interviewing for somebody for a job or something, I want to see what kind of tenacity and hard work they've had to do.
Yeah, my first business was when I was 15, was just a snow cone stand, and I had a little lawn mowing business as well as working at the local grocery store. So that was kind of my first bent into entrepreneurship, I think.
Were you doing that because you wanted some money in your pocket?
You know, I wasn't a great athlete, and it was such a small town, and everybody was doing, you know, their sports and stuff. And so I had more time and I just wanted to do something that I felt like I was really good at and seemed like I was just good at business. And so, you know, hard work is something I did learn from the farm, I guess. And, yeah. And that's something that I put into those businesses and just kind of got that work ethic going early on. It felt natural.
So did you go off to college?
I did. I started at West Texas A&M. I was in this show called Texas. It's like a show out in Palo Canyon.
Oh, I've heard about that.
Yeah.
That's like something you go to every year, right?
Right. And so you're a paid performer because I was, you know, I was a little bit of a singer and actor. And so I had a part in that and went there a year. But then I moved over to Hardin-Simmons University to finish out biology and chemistry degree in Abilene.
And so what'd you do when you got out of college?
So I had a little small chain of snow cone stands that I did for a bit during college. So I ran that and then I sold those. And then I've sold pharmaceuticals for a bit until it just wasn't for me right out of college. And then I became a teacher and a youth pastor before entering into kind of where, you know, the trajectory that I'm on right now, which is in the oil and gas industry.
I wanted you to come on because I think for me, you're such a professional executive. When I listen to you speaking to somebody on the phone or talking to them, you have such command over what you're talking about. And you've also shared with me some of the ups and downs you've had in your career and entrepreneur. And I think that's so typical of an entrepreneur. So right now you're a consultant in the oil and gas field. Is
yes.
That right?
Right.
And you also have a home services company.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us a little bit about your career, how you got to where you are today.
When I was a teacher, I started a little hair salon chain called Club Cuts. And
and you're doing all this while you have a full-time job.
Yes. It was
and
always.
And you did that while you were in college. You had a So you're just,
I've always had two or three sources of income.
Okay.
And that I'm not saying that's the right strategy, but that was just kind of what I did. And
right.
So I had these, they were really successful. And so it kind of gave me this decision. Do I want to go into business or do I want to stay into kind of that human aspect of things? And so, you know, I had a wife at the time, we'd just gotten married. And so I decided to go full on into business. So I kept those salons for 15 years or so. And then
what city was this?
This is in Midland, Texas.
Midland.
And then I,
which is in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, well, it's,
but they it's still sort need their haircut.
They do. And you know, you think about where most of our oil and gas from the US comes from.
Yeah.
It's Midland. And so, or at least, you know, the largest share of it is from there. And so I started working for one of my former students, his dad, and he gave me a job. And before you know it, I kind of moved up and felt like that I could start my own company. And so I did. I started a company. I got some institutional money, $50 million of capital, and started a company called Covenant Testing Technologies, and grew it to about 1,200 employees over the course of 5 years or so, 6 years.
You managed all that?
I did. I did manage that.
That had, the velocity of that had to be overwhelming.
First of all, you're not, no one trains you how to do something like that. And the responsibility of kind of feeling like that you have a level of responsibility for the 1,000 families, and you think about the spouses and the kids and all of that. And it can be a bit overwhelming, I think. And I, just like any other entrepreneur that's a founder, I think there's a limit to what a person can do. And so,
at least, you know, on their own.
Yeah. And I had a great team, and I put them in place. And really, in 2019, good, bad, or ugly, that transitioned over to them as they continue to run it through what has really been a tough time during our industry. I felt really compelled to try to move away from being the corporate guy and kind of transition to more helping the CEOs. And so in 19, I transitioned over and have built a small consulting firm and help young entrepreneurs or old entrepreneurs, and primarily in the energy industry, in technology, software, hardware, and things like that, that are in the midstream, downstream space mainly. And then I was really attracted also to the home services space, and because there had been a lot of private equity money moving into home services, and I kind of looked into why and saw that there's really high cash flow in it, and the entry point and was low for me. And mainly I had this skill of commoditized services and kind of low barrier to entry, things that are not sexy or exciting.
Which is what you're saying, home services. So give me, let us know what that
is. I started with pest control, and now I am in to pool maintenance, and you know, we'll probably be branching out beyond those two areas.
Things that have reoccurring revenue.
Yes, and things that are hard to disrupt with technology.
Yeah.
They also, one of the keys for me was just not having to have a brick and mortar location, and then also being able to expand it organically without a tremendous amount of capital, not a lot of working capital as well, and then not a lot of maintenance CapEx. And so the money that you bring in, it just generate this free cash flow. And, you know, most of your money that you bring in goes to the bank account, and instead of having to pay to just to keep the money afloat
or pay rent or stuff like that. So all the overhead.
Yeah. Trying to not have any roof line, the minimum amount of roof line you can have, and then just differentiating yourself by being a very high quality employer, you know, and that's one of the ways I've done in the past is just been a really good boss and providing a good work environment that empowers them in a way that, you know, that makes them feel good about themselves. And so they stay. And so if you can keep employees there, then it's easier to grow with. If you're always having to just to replace headcount, then it's really tough to grow.
So sounds like that might be one of your keys to success. So management, you're good at managing people.
I think that the laziness inside of me, you know, not wanting to do all the jobs probably is the thing I would admit the most.
So like, I got a problem, I got to figure out how to solve it.
I got to figure out how to help someone else solve it for me, you know? And so I think in doing so that I put a lot of trust in people and they feel empowered that way. And it frees me up also, you know, I told you I have several things going on. I don't necessarily have the time to go clean a pool or something
That's
like that.
Right.
So I don't even have a pickup and I don't have any way to go clean the pools, and I can't, that's on purpose. So that's one thing, you know, one way for me to do it. So I have to delegate it out.
So when you're interviewing somebody for a corporate job or your home services job, is there one key question you always ask that reveals something for you?
Well, we'll talk about the home services, I guess. Specifically for that, I like to find part-time people that desperately need extra money.
Okay.
And so while I'm giving them the value of two things, so extra money and time, they can manage their own schedule. They don't have to conform to my schedule. They can do it when they can do it. I want to ask any questions to any employee, whatever the position is, whether it's a vice president or a COO or a field person, you know, what is it that they value? You know, what are the things in your life that are most valuable to you?
I bet that's pretty revealing.
Yeah.
And what are your red flags?
Well, I'd suppose that I don't necessarily have any red flags. What I'm looking for is just authenticity. So if they can give me some authentic answers, and then I have the capability And, you know, one of my tactics in negotiation is I know what I'm willing to give up to somebody. And if I can pull out of them what they are willing to take in exchange for this transaction, and then I just give it freely with them without them having to ask for it.
Right. Which could be time. And you're thinking, oh, I need to pay more money, but they value time with their family or time off or something like that.
So, like in a corporate structure, you know, you've got an office like we have here. You know, the boss comes in and says, hey, we're going to move you to this office over here. We've decided, you know, we're going to put this group over here. And they don't think anything about it. Maybe you're moving them to a cubicle or, you know, you move people around like chess pieces. Okay. This is just a small example. It's happened to me once. And what you don't realize is that that person values, he may have significant value about his office. He may like the color of the carpet or the way the light is in the afternoon. You have no idea.
Access to the coffee or the bathroom, whatever.
When you disrupt people's life, then it causes them internally to begin to look for alternatives to that. And so what I try to do intuitively is to try to fill those gaps. And I can't necessarily write a book on it or tell anybody how to do it. But, you know, my track record has been, I think, pretty good in retaining people better than my competition. And so I think that's probably my best gift is finding and retaining the right people. So having enough flexibility in your systems and processes and your business model to adapt to that person's needs, I think is really critical. You're seeing that now in this great resignation that's happening. People want that flexibility.
So John, what do you value?
Well, I value time with my family.
Tell us about your family. It is special.
Well, I have a wonderful wife, Leah, and we've been married, I think 17 years. It's hard for me to remember. She asked me the other day how old she was. She didn't believe that she was going to be 43. She goes, I don't think so. The math doesn't add up for me. But we have 5 children, 4 boys and a girl. I am uniquely gifted that I have 3 of my boys have a very rare eye disease called blue cone monochromacy, which they only have their blue cones as opposed to no red or green cones, which makes them legally blind. They can function as a sighted person, but they are low vision, and so they have a disability.
Can they read and walk around with safety?
Yeah, they can. But they also are, you know, qualified to be part of the Texas School for the Blind here in Texas. Okay. And be a use a cane if they wanted to, or Braille, or any of those things that would help them.
So they won't be drivers?
No, I don't want to say that. It is possible that they could with certain lenses, and one of mine especially has a little better vision than the rest of them.
So I know your values, when somebody gets to talk to you, your values are very evident. It is very clear that you've got priorities, you have values, and you've got principles. So you have recently kind of aligned your workday with these 2 companies. How did you come about that? How is that a good fit for you now doing the consulting and the home services?
So I kind of look at things as I learned it in Stephen Covey's 7 Habits, your sphere of influence. And so, you know, I may think it's a great idea to go out and put wind farms out into the Gulf of Mexico, but I don't know anything about wind farms, and I don't have the hundreds of millions of dollars in capital, and I'm definitely not interested in raising it to do something like that. So I look to see what I can do. So you look at your skill set, you look at your contacts and your network, and you go from there. And then you have kind of your non-starters. And so for me, while I was willing to and even pursued W-2 employment, I preferred to be sort of my own, you know, my own boss, I guess, if you want to call that.
You've been that way since you were 14.
Yes, and that's true, I guess, but officially, you know, still being part of a company that is...
It is tougher to be an employee.
Even if you're an employee of your own company that you started, you're still an employee, especially since if you're a minority shareholder. So okay. I wanted to be the majority shareholder of anything that I did moving forward. And then I wanted to have something that did not require a lot of capital. And like I said, you know, maintenance capital, growth capital, that I could do it with, you know, I saw it on your intro, is grit and whatever it is that, you know, just put those things together that I think could be, you know, productive. And I just don't subscribe to the philosophy, as much as I'd like to, is to follow your passions. To me, I look at this long-term trajectory of, you know, what's 10, 20, 30 years out there.
Well, and that's where your values are guiding you, because you've got a family of 5 children who will need some support as they get older. And that does include financial support. So you got to make sure you provide for your family.
Right. And unfortunately, this disease of entrepreneurship will probably pass down to them, as much as I don't want them to do it. But, you know, it's not a bad thing.
No, it's not. All right, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, I'd like you to give the entrepreneur who is on that roller coaster a few words of encouragement.
Sure.
And also, you are involved in some gene therapy. And I'd like you to tell us a little bit about that. We'll be right back.
This segment is sponsored by Business eSuites, the perfect workspace for small businesses and startups, offering virtual mail, virtual office, meeting rooms, co-working, shared and private offices, even office warehouse space, perfect for e-commerce. Visit businesseSuites.com today. They help businesses take off.
All right, we're back with John Cavett from Anastasis Global and Home Services. If you want to look it up, it's Aquamatic Pool Services in League City. And so, John, I asked before the break if you had some words of encouragement for the entrepreneur, maybe on the roller coaster, because you've been there.
I'm a Christ follower, and you don't have to be a Christ follower to adopt the philosophies and principles in the book of Proverbs and then throughout scripture. But there is scripture that says many are the plans of a man's heart, but it's the Lord's ways that prevail. And so what I find is that, you know, as an entrepreneur, that we plan things, you know, we put things out there. And what I do know is that if you envision it in your mind exactly how it's going to be, then probably it's not going to work out that way. But in my experience is that it always seems to just work out in the end. And so my word of encouragement would be to trust your judgment, to trust your instinct. Don't expect anyone else to validate it for you, but trust yourself.
It can be alone.
And then also, you know, have a healthy mix of living in the right brain and the left brain. You want to be imaginative, and where that imagination is, that's where our drive and ambition comes from. But also, you know, be logical. Spend plenty of time doing the math and looking at the trajectory that you're on. Don't not live in reality. So I think with a healthy mix of confidence in yourself, confidence in your own abilities, and trusting your judgment, and realizing that it's not going to work out how that you planned it, but that doesn't mean it's not going to work out.
Right. And I know we learn from our failures too,
because
you will crash and burn maybe once, maybe more than that.
Well, I think that statistically it's bound to happen to you many times if you keep at it. But what choice do you have but to plow forward? And then just, you know, having your values on the right things, especially the more it's centered on people, I think there's a lot more reward in that. But, you know, as far as an entrepreneur is concerned, you know, you need to surround yourself with people that will breathe life into you. You need to find your support that believes that you can do whatever it is that you are able to do, that truly believes, you know, I don't care if that's your mom, your dad, or your,
right.
And try to get rid of those, if you can, keep them at an arm's length to those that don't, I think.
Yeah.
And so
sometimes that's hard, especially if you're not paying the bills.
Right.
You know, you're going to have doubters.
Yeah.
But you still have to be tenacious.
But we're living in a wonderful world that has so many opportunities to go and expand into new ideas without a tremendous amount of capital.
Exactly.
It's an exciting time for young, budding entrepreneurs. And, you know, anybody's always welcome to look me up on LinkedIn. And I've helped many young entrepreneurs kind of go through their model and their ideas, and I'm always willing to do that for people.
Yeah, so if you look them up on LinkedIn, you're going to be impressed with the profile. I was. You also have on there, you've received some awards from the Houston Business Journal, the most admired CEO, which I think that's pretty incredible. And then Ernst & Young Entrepreneur of the Year, you are a regional winner and a national finalist. I'm sure those opportunities also come with you doing a little self-promotion too, right? Well, especially the Ernst & Young, you got to work hard. You got to do all the...
They have a application, you know. So first of all, Ernst & Young found, you know, the whole opportunity there is just incredible. It's an incredible group of people. It's an incredible program. Very grateful for that. Yes, we had a PR department, and it was a bit of self-promotion that I don't like and enjoy at all. But in our view, it was for the benefit of the company, as right. You know, you're always trying to sell something, you know, and you're trying to sell your company, then, you know, that happens. You want to promote.
Yeah. And being a humble servant like you are, it is hard to do, you know, self-promotion.
Yeah, in this world, it's kind of part of it, and I'm not real good at that, so I did hire somebody.
Yeah, it helps when I need to get some help on that. Okay, so one more thing I wanted to ask you about is, you've told me you're involved in gene therapy, and I think that is for the benefit of your sons. Mm-hmm. Is that correct? So tell us a little bit about that, and is it volunteer work? You're extensively involved.
Part of the foundation called BCM Families Foundation. It's a wonderful group of people, families from around the world that suffer from this rare disease, or usually are parents of somebody that suffers from the rare disease. And, you know, we've been very fortunate to be able to gather a bunch of resources together. We got an animal model. We had several studies done. We have seen it actually cured in a mouse. And
seriously? Wow. Yep.
And have worked with the biotech to get it to the point where we're just now, we're ready to actually submit the application for the clinical trials, for human trials, as soon as we can kind of come up with the money to do that.
Is it all that happening here in the United States or in another country?
The majority of this happens in the U.S. Yeah, so it happens in California, in Pennsylvania, Florida, other places. But there is a founder of the foundation is in Rome, the U.K. as well.
How'd y'all find each other? Like on Facebook or something?
Yeah, in Facebook, really? Right. And then we just kind of work together to finding folks all over the world that might, you know, collaborate with us to do this. So that's been
some leadership. I mean, just to take a group of people like in a support group to come up with a company to solve, you know, cure it.
Yeah, I think the hardest, I think probably my role in it, since I'm, you know, I even have a science background, you have all these very smart people with the very high IQ. And so I think it takes a little bit more EQ to kind of get people to get along. There occasionally is some egos and things like that. So just getting everybody to get on the same page. And so that's kind of been my role in it, which I've really enjoyed, working with these incredibly gifted PhD, MDs, you know, with multiple letters behind their name. And then just the amazing work that they do, the passion that they put behind it. But then being able to kind of help be instrumental, even in a very small way, to put those resources and that energy together to produce something that could make people that are legally blind to be able to see and drive a car and be mobile and that kind of thing. And that would be a miracle.
I suspect that because of your entrepreneurial background, and when you have an idea and you follow through and you make it happen, that's kind of giving you that push to say, yeah, we can do something about this.
Absolutely. I think that if there's anything that I can say that I've been able to experience many times, is just being able to dream it up, envision it in my head, and then just see it become a reality through the hands of others, mm-hmm. not my own hand, but through the hands of others. And that's been very exciting. And I have a long list of those things. They're just blessings, you know, everything from, you know, little youth groups that I put together when I was in high school or college, to talent shows, to companies, to, you know, to bigger things, you know, acquisitions, and, you know, even my little pool company doubling in size and just within a few months. It's been exciting to see, and seeing how the people's lifestyle has been improved by, you know, making more money.
Yeah, you're exactly what I expected today. An interesting story of an entrepreneur who, I didn't know you started at 14. You probably didn't know you did either, you know, because you just kind of, that's your nature, just to start things. I am curious if you would come back and let us know what your next chapter. An entrepreneur is always up to something. That's why I say. So I suspect you've got some things that you in the pipeline that you're dreaming about. And I know you've also helped the tenants here at Business E-Suites learn about funding. And because you've had to go and get funding from all these different things. So would you come back and tell us more of your story?
Story is going to be how I transition, what happens to me as I have teenagers. And so maybe that's going to be a big part of it. But other than that, I'd be happy to come back.
Well, I'd love to hear the success on your gene therapy.
Yeah. I hope so too. I hope to hear about successes on that as well. That's a high hurdle, but we have faith.
And you sound like you got the skills to make it happen.
Maybe more of a cog in the wheel on some things, but certainly I'm just one of the people. Yeah. That helps make it happen.
I thank you so much for stopping by today. And how can someone reach you if they have a question or they need consulting? Just kind of want to pick your brain about what you do.
I think LinkedIn's a good way to just to reach out to me. And so I usually am pretty receptive to any reach outs on LinkedIn.
All right. I'll put those in the show notes, his name and his LinkedIn profile. So, John, thank you again. I'm so glad you stopped by.
Thanks, Laura.
All right. Until next time, you better be up to something.
Thanks for joining us this week on Small Business Insights. Make sure you visit our website at fisherpodcast.com, where you can follow the podcast on iTunes or your favorite podcast platform, so you'll never miss a show. If you enjoyed and found value in today's episode, we'd appreciate a rating and review on iTunes, or simply share it with a friend. That would help us out too. Make sure you tune in next week for our next episode. Until then, you better be up to something.